Welcome to Coffee Table Mythos. I'm Eliza.
And I'm Leah.
Grab your favorite beverage and let's talk myths. Tell me what you're drinking.
Is it the salted caramel mocha from Starbucks?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so here's the deal, guys. After the shenanigans that happened with the peppermint mocha a couple weeks ago, I was like, I'm not gonna get that anymore. It was a little too intense for me. So I was going to get just regular iced mocha with the raspberry syrup in it. And that was my plan. I've been planning it since last night. And then this morning, when Eliza was looking at the actual Starbucks app to order, she was like, oh, they still have your salted caramel mocha. And I'm a slut for caramel. Yeah. So then I was like indecisive for a little while, but the idea was already in my brain. So I had to get the caramel one.
Yes. And
what are you drinking?
Well, I'm not drinking it anymore because I consumed the whole thing.
Very quickly.
Very quickly. It was, so I got a Irish cream cold foam cold brew beverage from Starbucks this morning, and it was probably the best Irish cream cold foam cold brew I'd ever had, mainly just because, like, I guess by the time I went in to go pick them up, our drinks had been sitting there for a long enough time that the flavored cream had mixed with everything.
Yeah.
So it actually tasted quite good, and they had, like, a shit ton of cocoa powder on the top, and it actually mixed really well with the cold brew and the foam, so.
Nice.
Yeah.
But that is long since a happy memory, and she's currently drinking water.
Water. Yes, I am drinking water.
Being a responsible adult.
We went on a little excursion this morning, because for Christmas this year, we are making presents instead of buying most of our presents.
Yes.
Because it's just financially a little bit easier on us.
They're made with love.
They are made with love. So we had to go get some supplies at Michael's.
I had suggested that we make our own Christmas cards this year because we have a lot of card making items left over from the last set we made.
Yes.
And the only thing I said we needed was like a stamp that had pine trees on it.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily Christmas trees, just like pine trees for like a winter theme. So I go and I get what I was heading to Michael's for, and then I remembered I needed a stamp. So I went in the stamp aisle, which is dangerous. First of all, you should not, I know I said, I'll just run in. You should never trust me to just go into a craft store alone.
You know I'm worse. Because that's true. If I go in with you, I'll be like, we could do this, right? And then like we'll come out with $100 worth of items.
Yeah.
Or more. Just because we're like, well, we can do this and we can do that. We're like, when we're in a craft supply store, we start thinking of all these different projects we could be doing, and then we just go do them. But in our defense, we look up the sales on the apps in the craft supply store we're at before we just go and, you know,
buy all kinds of crazy stuff.
Buy everything.
So I end up in the stamp aisle, and I find some pine trees that were really cute, and apparently there's like this new 3D stamp feature they're doing where like each tree going further back has a different texture so that it looks 3D
when you
make it. And then I also found a set of like holiday wishes stamps, but I had a coupon.
She did. She always has coupons. Like our run today was literally Starbucks, Michael's, and
grocery store.
I was upset because all my chicken was gone.
That was sad.
That was really sad. Like, I got steak, but out of chicken, so we'll figure it out.
You're first this week because it's Greek.
Yes, this week is Greek week. So I have actually two that I'm going to be talking about. One has such a small story attached to it that I couldn't make a full episode worth thing on it. So I'm going to tell you the story about this mythological being, and then we're going to go into my main one. So for Greek week, the first one we're going to speak of is the Tunisian fox.
Super excited!
Yeah, as soon as I showed it to her, she was like, oh my god, we have to go over it. And I was like, I liked it so much, I had to talk about it. So the Tunisian fox is also known as the Cadmean vixen, was a gigantic fox destined never to be caught. It was said that it was sent by the gods, possibly Dionysus, to prey upon Thebes for a national crime. It does not specify what crime it was.
I really want to know what these people in Thebes were up to, because they mentioned like all the bad shit that was happening to Thebes in the Hercules movie.
All they think about is Hercules. Yeah. Just like,
was that before or after the fire? The earthquake happened first.
Yeah.
What about the tornado?
At least poor Fluffy is all right. That's all I think about. Okay, so anyways, Amphitryon was sent by the Regent of Thebes to destroy the giant fox.
Octopus.
To do so, Amphitryon fetched the giant magical dog, Lelops, who was destined to catch everything it chased in order to catch the Temesian fox. Due to such a paradoxical nature of the abilities possessed by the fox and the dog, Zeus turned them both to stone and then cast them into the stars, and to this day remains Canis Major, which is Lelops, and Canis Minor, which is the Temesian fox in the stars.
That's super cool. Yeah. I have a note about stars in mine, too.
Really?
Yeah.
That's super legit. Okay, so that was the Temesian fox tale. Now we're going to go into what I actually studied, and that was the phoenix.
Nice.
Yes. Now, just to be clear, I looked into the phoenix, and originally it's like, this is originally Greek. Well, apparently there's like this huge debate on whether the Greeks or the Egyptians came up with it first. So, the phoenix in ancient Greece was a long-lived bird that cyclically regenerates, or they're born again. They are associated with the sun and obtain new life rising from the ashes of its predecessor, like my hopes and dreams.
Dark.
I know. In some variations, most, it dies with a combustion and a show of flames after building a nest of fine aromatic woods, and from the pile of ash, the new phoenix arises. The phoenix embalms its predecessor in an egg of myrrh and flies to the city of Heliopolis. That's what I want to say. So, the city of Heliopolis, to deposit the egg on the altar of the sun god. In other variations, it dies without the burst of flames and decomposes before being born again. According to Greek mythology, the phoenix lived in Arabia next to a well and at dawn bathed in the well water. They are commonly associated with colors red and gold or yellow. However, there is no clear consensus on the original coloring of the phoenix.
Interesting.
They have been linked to the civilization of Phoenicia, which was famous for producing purple dye from conch shells, primarily modern Lebanon by the Mediterranean Sea is where this was.
That's very expensive.
Yes. Also, Phoenician root means those that work with red dye and may be from a West Semitic word for madder, which is a red dye. The original Greek word for the phoenix was poniki.
Huh.
Yeah. There is also a debate over whether the phoenix mythology originated in Greece or Egypt, as I said. Some believe the Egyptians' Bennu was influenced by the myth of the phoenix. 19th century scholars learned the solar bird Bennu from Heliopolis had many similarities to the Greek phoenix. Researchers believe a now-extinct large heron was possibly also a real-life inspiration for the Bennu. One version of the Egyptian myth of the Bennu is that it burst from the heart of Osiris, and in other myths, it created itself from fire burned on a holy tree in a sacred precinct of the Temple of Ra.
That was a mouthful.
Yes. The Egyptian Bennu looked more like a heron, while the Greek phoenix resembled more of an eagle or a peacock.
That's interesting.
The earliest clear mention in ancient Greek literature is the precepts of Chiron. If you all have listened to the Centaur episode, that is who we're speaking of. It's attributed to the 6th century BC Greek poet Hesiod, and here the centaur Chiron tells Achilles, "A chattering crow lives out 9 generations of aged men, but a stag's life is 4 times a crow's, and a raven's life makes 3 stags old, while the phoenix outlives 9 ravens. But we, rich-haired nymphs, daughters of Zeus, the aegis holder, outlive 10 phoenixes." So, here's my question. How old would that make a phoenix? So, in ancient Greece, we actually ended up looking up what the average age was for a man, an aged man, what it was considered an aged man in Greece.
Mm-hmm. And that is someone who aged over 80.
Yes.
And apparently the reason why we have such low life expectancy numbers is because it's averaged with the number of childbirths that had ended in death,
mm-hmm.
and it brought the number way down. But there were some people that lived to be in their 80s back then.
Yes.
So an aged man was anyone over 80, which would mean that a crow lives 720 years.
Yes.
A stag lives 2,880 years. A raven, 8,640. A phoenix, 77,760 years.
It's thanks to Math's chicken calculations, interpreted by Kim, Leah's sister. Because I asked her originally, I was like, can you do math for me? Because I can't do it. She's like, let me ask Math Chicken. Hold on. And that was the calculation she gave me. So then there's the rebirth of the Phoenix tale. First, the Phoenix flew west into the mortal world until it reached the spice groves that grew in Arabia. It stopped there to gather the finest herbs and spices, especially cinnamon, before continuing its journey to Phoenicia, where it built a nest and awaited for the sun to rise. The next morning, when the sun god Apollo began to drag his chariot across the sky, the Phoenix would turn east to face him as the sun rose on the horizon. It would then sing one of the most beautiful and haunting melodies known to man. So beautiful, it would cause Apollo to pause to listen. When the Phoenix finished its farewell song, Apollo readied his chariots and continued across the sky. This caused a spark to fall from the sky and ignite the nest of herbs, and the Phoenix in flames. All that was left was a tiny worm.
Yeah. Ugh.
After 3 days, a new Phoenix would rise from the ashes, transformed from the worm, and begin the next cycle. There's an alternate version where the Phoenix died at Sun City of Heliopolis instead of Phoenicia, and the body decomposes in 3 days instead of flames.
Slightly more gross.
Yes. Another version states that the Phoenix goes to the mortal world when it reaches near end of its lifespan and loses many of its beautiful feathers on the way and sets itself on fire on its nest instead of the sun god.
That sounds more like what was in Harry Potter.
Yes. It's considered good luck to spot a Phoenix, and it signified a good leader who was very wise had begun given ruling power. Also, it's a sign of a new era.
That makes sense.
They are said to consume frankincense and aromatic gums. The Phoenix is featured in a lot of stories. For example, Harry Potter. I know you X-Men nerds know that Jean Grey becomes the Phoenix. And there's like way more than that, but that's just like two popular ones I know of. And Phoenix, Arizona in the U.S. got its name because a frontier station settled on the ruins of a Native American site. The first European inhabitants named the city based on the idea that from the ruins of one city, another was created. But yeah, that's the Phoenix. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break and we'll be right back.
And we're back. So for this week, I researched Kerberos, and that's spelled K-E-R-B-E-R-O-S, or is anglicized as Cerberus, C-E-R-B-E-R-U-S. And he is the multi-headed canine guard of the underworld.
Ooh.
Kerberos is the son of Typhon and Echidna, and the brother of the Lernaean Hydra, Orthrus, and Chimera.
Hmm.
And all of them are like multi-headed, multi-animaled creatures.
Wonderful.
Depending on the author, depends on how many and what kind of heads Kerberos had.
Okay.
More recent mythology agrees that Kerberos had 3 dog heads. Earlier writings differ, however. Hesiod believed he had 50 heads.
Jesus!
Horace described 1 dog head and 100 snake heads.
What the fuck?
While Pindar said just 100 heads, so I'm not sure what exactly his types were.
That's a fuck ton of heads. And how did you have the time to count when you had a guardian of the underworld looking at you?
Right. Tsitsi states 3 dog heads and 47 heads of all other animals. And Apollodorus writes 3 dog heads and many snakes along his back.
Please tell me we're doing the 3-headed one.
She doesn't want to draw 100 heads.
That's a lot of fucking heads.
We can do 3-headed.
Okay. I'm just like, no offense to anyone that would like me to draw 100 heads.
I don't think our paper's big enough for all that.
It's just, I might throw hands. If I have to do that.
Artwork shows Kerberos with 1 to 3 snake tails, depending on the piece, and he has venom on his teeth. So it's Kerberos's job to keep the dead in the underworld and the living out. It's said he likes honey cakes and music.
Aww.
And he enjoys long walks along the river Styx. Just kidding. This isn't his Tinder bio.
Damn it. I was about to be like, is this his bio so he can get a lady?
So it really did say that he likes honey cakes and music, but I thought I would just be a little funny about the river Styx.
It could be also a male or a non-binary. I'm not here to judge. I'm just saying.
So most stories of Kerberos have to do with Heracles' 12 trials. In it, Euripides has Heracles retrieve Kerberos from the underworld. There are varying accounts on how this was done. One version said he just asked Hades nicely to borrow the dog. And Hades said, as long as you don't harm him, sure.
Okay.
In another version, Hades says he can take him if he can defeat the dog without using his sword.
Huh.
So Heracles uses his lion pelt to protect himself from two of the heads, while he chokes the other one into submission.
Damn.
Kerberos is never killed. I just want to say that before we go any further.
Okay.
Then another version has Heracles fight Hades for the rights to take the dog. And in traditional Greek art, it shows Heracles fighting Kerberos with his wooden club.
Aww.
Diodorus states that Persephone welcomed Heracles as a brother and just loaned him the dog.
Oh my gosh, I love that version.
Etc. Because there's just a whole bunch of different ways. So once Heracles acquires Kerberos, he paraded Kerberos around Greece. Then he took him to Eurystheus, and after that, he took him back to the underworld. But Hesychius says that Kerberos escaped and returned himself to the underworld.
He can take care of himself. He's his own being.
So that's a quick rundown of Kerberos. He's all over the place in modern media. There's the 1997 Disney's Hercules, which is Eliza's favorite. I know it's more like the shadow of him, right?
What do you mean?
Never mind.
Wait, no. Tell me what you meant by that.
Do you see the actual dog or do you see the shadow on the wall of the dog in the movie? It's been so long since I saw it.
He straight up tames it. He's like, he goes to Hades, holding them by the ears, barges into Hades, and he's just like, give me fucking Meg back. And he's just like, chill, man, chill. It's gonna be okay. I'm sorry. And he punches him into the fucking face.
Then it was the guardian in the 2020 movie Scoob.
Yeah.
It's also the title of a 2005 sci-fi film.
Huh.
He's in the webcomic Lore Olympus.
Yes.
And he's in Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
Oh, that's pretty cool. I didn't know that. Of course, I haven't played enough of that game to find out yet.
Right. And then he's in the anime series Cardcaptor Sakura as a character. Yeah. A recurring character where he changes from kind of like a lion with wing form down to this like little tiny stuffed animal size.
So cute.
Thing. And it's also the name of several ships and a sonar system, among other things.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So many things just use the name that are unrelated. Here's the star part I told you about.
Mm.
In 1687, Johannes Hevelius introduced the Kerberos constellation, where Kerberos is a three-headed snake that is wrestling with the stars of the Hercules constellation.
Huh.
But it has become obsolete, and they just include those stars in the Hercules constellation now.
Oh, interesting.
And then, interesting fact I found out while researching was, it's said that when Kerberos was coming out of the underworld and into the light of day,
mm-hmm.
he threw up bile on the earth.
Ew.
I know. And from where it landed, aconite or wolfsbane grew.
Interesting.
Which is why it's poisonous, because of his venom. And as some people may already know, aconite is so poisonous you should not be touching it with your bare hands.
Right.
So, I thought that was interesting because I like plants.
That's epic.
And that's Kerberos.
So, Assassin's Creed Odyssey, I've been meaning to play more of it, but here's the thing. Like,
is that the one you tried to make me play?
Maybe. I can't remember.
It's not exactly my cup of tea gaming style.
Yeah, it's definitely a little bit more, there's a lot more involved with playing it. I do, however, thoroughly plan on playing Assassin's Creed Valhalla as soon as I can get my hands on it. Because you know how much of a fucking slut I am for that Norse mythology. I mean,
just a couple more weeks.
I know. I am hanging in there. Chomping at the bit, but hanging in there. Because by the time I get to play it, I could at least look at some, like, helpful guides and hints and tools to, like... Like, some people like playing games without looking at anything to be like, I did this all by myself. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just, I know in this game in particular, every single choice you make impacts the remaining gameplay. Mm-hmm. At least it's supposed to.
It's like a pick-your-own-adventure book?
Kind of, in a way, yeah. And Fable, I used to love playing Fable. Very much the same way. I mean, you get to the same...
destination.
Kind of the same destination, as you will, but, like, it still affects things in different ways. So, I'm intrigued to see where this is going to go.
We did watch the trailer.
We did.
Had to Google some stuff because you hadn't finished the previous one, so we were like, what is this talking about?
Yeah. Anywho's it, I'm finally going back to the office.
Mm-hmm.
Which is nice. My COVID tests were all negative.
Yay.
So far. Which is great.
Knock on wood, Jesus.
Yeah. I'm just knocked on it. 3 times. If I have to come back to work at home again, I'll be okay. It's just, it's different. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. I find it's easier to get distracted when you're working at home.
Yeah. But also when you're home too, that's like even more distracting.
Rude, I just sat there being good.
You were being very good. It was just like, I think if I were to work from home again, I'd want to like get a longer cord for
the Ethernet
cable and set it up down here instead of
in the middle of the living room
upstairs.
Yeah, they gave us a 6-foot long Ethernet cable and our Wi-Fi box is on the first floor.
Yeah.
So there was only one place we could put it, and it was basically right in the middle of the living room.
Literally, like, you walk through the front door, smack, you hit the card table that all the computers were on.
Yeah, I definitely hit my leg,
like, a few times
in the middle of the night when I was trying to get a drink.
Yeah, it wasn't good, but I digress. We talked about something last week that we were going to try. We've watched both of the Spider-Man movies now.
Yep, we finally did that.
We've... watch the first 3 episodes of Star Wars.
That was funny because it was really late, like the night before we had to go to work.
Yeah.
And we're like, do we want to watch something that'll kind of calm us down so we can go to sleep? Or do we want to watch the 3rd episode where Anakin's a dipshit? And we were like, let's just watch the 3rd one. And she's just watching me watch it. To see all my, like, reactions to shit.
She's hilarious.
And I'm just like, this motherfucker.
Casper and Stephanie, if you're listening to this, I now understand. Because that was the whole reason they would have me watch animes they've, like, already seen multiple times. Because my initial reactions would be so ridiculous that they would be like, what else can we show you? Because I need more of this. I was like, geez. I think Stephanie straight up told me, she's like, we need to have a show of just you reacting to other shows.
Oh my gosh.
I'm like, so basically like a fucking Twitch stream.
I guess.
I'm sure that would have copyright problems, but still. All right, guys. So that's just a little update of what we've been up to. And for next week, be ready. We are going to bring in the Norse. Got any reminders?
Yeah. So reminders, everybody. Make sure to check out our art for this week's entities on our Instagram at Coffee Table Mythos. If you want to share any art of your own of these creatures, make sure to use our hashtag Coffee Table Mythos so that we and our followers can check them out. As always, if you have any stories or requests, please email us at coffeetablemythos@gmail.com. And remember to mention if you want a shout out of either a name or handle and where to find you, or if you would like to remain anonymous. You can also find us on our Facebook page, Coffee Table Mythos, where you can message us as well.
Check out our merch on Teespring at teespring.com/store/coffee-table-mythos. We are adding more listings as we research more beings and make more art. If you would like to donate to us, you can on anchor.fm/coffeetablemythos, or you can become a patron through patreon.com/coffeetablemythos. For right now, all donations will go to making this podcast better. Thank you so much for listening. Please give us a like, follow, subscribe, share, and review our podcast if you have the time. We are interested in what you have to say. This is Coffee Table Mythos. We'll catch you next time. If you want to edit this in later on, I wanted to discuss work, had me do this personality test.
Oh, jeez.
And I found it fantastic. It's kind of like the Myers-Briggs, if anybody's heard of it that's listening to this, where it gives you like the four different letters, but it goes a little bit more in depth. It's called 16 Personalities. This is not a sponsor. This is not a sponsor. We just did this for kicks and giggles. So when I first took this in high school, I was ESTJ, which is like kind of like a person with a huge stick up their ass, essentially. At least that's how I took it. But anyways, now I took it like 10 years later and I came out with, they called me the advocate, the INFJ assertive, which means you're basically more sure of yourself and like who you are as a person. And I actually feel like that fits me a lot more. I used to think I was more of an extrovert, but as a grown-up person, I have definitely, like, I can talk to people. I have no problem talking to people, but I definitely need to have some time to relax, at least a little bit. And you, like, as soon as I took it, I was like, Leah, take this test for me, please. And guess what she got?
The adventurer.
Which I find hilarious.
So, the adventurer letters are ISFP and then dash T. And they break it down, this website breaks it down into like percentages for you. So it says like, energy. This trait shows where we direct our mental energy. And then it's based between intuitive and observant, and it'll give you a percentage. And they do energy, nature, tactics, and identity. And I just thought that was funny because I always consider Eliza more of an adventuring type.
Yeah, that's what was hilarious. Because I was like, between the two of us, usually I'm the one being like, let's go outside.
Yeah, and I'm like, I want to stay in the house.
And I'm like, let's be in the out.
I want to stay in the in.
And to just like explain, my extroversion and introversion were like slap dab in the middle. It was 1% toward an introvert. And that's what gave me introvert.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, it's just really fucking funny. You're a very charming person, though.
Aw, thank you.
I mean,
it's a facade.
It is.
People always like, you're so good with people. And I'm like, I wish I was under a rock somewhere.
Yeah.
Anywhere else in this.
Yeah.
But the other cool thing about their website is it tells you, like, famous people that are real and then also famous people from, like, TV shows.
And yeah.
The characters.
Exactly.
That are your letter type.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives you a whole bunch of them. It was like 10 different people at
least.
Oh,
yeah. It was quite an extensive list.
And it's free. You can pay to have more information, but it already gives you so much information. Like pages of it. It'll go into what you're like in relationships, what you're like in romantic relationships, at work, raising kids, all kinds of stuff. It's actually really neat.
Yeah. My boss, we ended up doing, every single one of us in my team, we took this test. And my boss basically wrote down all the different people that had the different personality types. And, like, we've joked because some people at work, they'd be like, well, I'm the defender. And I'm like, well, I'm an advocate. So we're like, we need to get t-shirts.
That would be cool. If you could do it with, like, sports numbers.
Yeah, exactly. It'd be so cool. Anyways, I say that and it's just kind of, it's kind of funny. I know some people didn't like what their results were at work. A lot of us were like, this is spot on, because I was looking at mine and I was like, dang, that is like to a T.
If you've ever taken the Briggs-Meyer test, it's not as long as that one.
Mm-mm.
It definitely didn't take nearly as long. When I took the Briggs-Meyer in high school, it was so long. I started doubting what I had already written because they ask you the same question multiple
times.
And I'm like, didn't I already say this? And it just, like, threw me for a loop. So I don't know how accurate that one was. I do remember that all my things were 50-50.
Oh, dang.
And my teachers were like, that's really weird. And I was like, well, yeah. I did get some of my letters split, like, 49-51 on this. And then some, like, the introvert-extrovert ones were a lot more introvert.
That pegs you pretty well. Your face. But the other thing about adventurers is they're very, very artistic. In that.
Who would have guessed?
I know.
Okay, funny story. So we went and got the stuff from Michaels, and I wanted to start working on the project while Eliza was in the grocery store, and I did not have the proper tools to do so. So I rigged some tools using a hair chopstick and then a hair pin of a different size so that I could start knitting in the car.
I'm just going to let you all know that her family is notorious for doing that. Just taking objects, not using them for what they're supposed to be used for, but making the job work and be done by doing so, which I find absolutely cool.
MacGyver.
MacGyver, there it is.
That's the word.
You MacGyvered it. And you know what's funny is when we were coming home, there was a North Carolina plate that said, knit for life.
Forever.
No, knit forever, I'm sorry.
And I thought that was funny. Because it was like passing me on, I was driving, it was on my side. And I was like, I wasn't just doing that with hairpins.
Yeah, it was great. Anyways, so thank you all for listening. We look forward to next time.